Welcome, world, to another great episode of the App Protecting Gage, known as the Ape Academy Podcast. We're so happy you can join us today. We are continuing our series on slavery and how it led to the most bloody, costly war in American history. We are live. All right, guys, we're going to do a quick intro. Housekeeping. Okay, so once again, my name is Chase H. I am the host of this podcast. I am a UVA and Arizona State University graduate, and I am a historian of 19th century America. I study Reconstruction, race, labor, and the history of criminal justice, specifically during the later part of the 19th century, okay? So I'm an American historian, and I love studying race relations during this period, okay? This is a fascinating time in American history. I feel that the period known as Reconstruction, the period after the Civil War, was one of the most formative periods in America. Now, in order to get there, we have to discuss the lead up and how slavery really fueled the Civil War and fueled the conflict. The reason why we're discussing this topic is because slavery and the Civil War has come up within probably the last 5 years increasingly. We're talking about Civil War, Confederate monuments, the Confederate flag, Confederate generals, their statues, their kind of veneration of these Confederate war heroes. That has become a big political issue, all right, hot button political issue, as also slavery, acknowledging the importance of slavery and race in the history of this country and kind of forming our society as we know it today, has been discussed very, very widely in the media. All right, so we're going to talk about how history relates to where we are now. I feel like that's important. There's not enough historians out here that are relating history to our current situation, our current society, all right? Once again, we're on social media. We're on IG, Ape Academy Podcast, TikTok, Ape Academy Pod. We're starting a YouTube very soon. So let's hop right into it. Today, we're talking about the lead up, the Missouri Compromise of 1820. This is important to know because it kind of sets the stage for some of the conflicts that come later, right? This sets the stage for a showdown, really, between advocates of free territory, meaning there's no slavery in the territories, and advocates of slavery, pro-slavery forces, mostly from the South, that believe that all of America should be open to have slavery. I'm going to read a quick quote from James G. Blaine, who was the Speaker of the House of Representatives between 1869 and 1875. This is a direct quote. Quote, "The Missouri question marked a distinct era in the political thought of the country. Suddenly and without warning, the North and the South, the free states and the slave states, found themselves arrayed against each other in violent and absorbing conflict," end quote. So that pretty much sums up the importance of this era, especially the Missouri question. And we're going to talk about that in a few minutes. So we got a few sources for this podcast. Remember, I'm a historian. I need sources. I need real sources, not, you know, fake news or alt-right websites or far-left websites, okay? So the first one is from Mr. George Washington Platt. His book is called A History of the Republican Party, and it was written in 1904. So this is a really, really kind of ground-level view of the Republican Party as it was in its early formation, right, its early kind of ideological development. It was only 50 years old when this book was written, so this gives anyone who wants to know about how Republicans were and what they believed in around the time of the Civil War and a little bit after, this is a great book. I'm also going to use history.com and britannica.com, okay? So those are good kind of general websites for quality info. All right, so there's three major events that is important for everyone to know in the lead up to the Missouri Compromise, before the Missouri Compromise came into being, right? So three major things. The first, it was the Fugitive Slave Act, which was passed in January of 1793. So the Fugitive Slave Act, that was the first event. The act enforced Article 4, Section 2 of the U.S. Constitution, which authorized, and this law, what it did was it authorized any federal district judge, or circuit court judge, or any state magistrate. So anyone with any type of judicial authority, legal authority across the country to decide the fate of an alleged fugitive slave without a trial by jury. Okay, so if anyone alleges that this man right here, he escaped from my plantation, I tracked him from Mississippi all the way up to New Jersey, there doesn't have to be evidence. It's up to one person, one federal judge, to decide this person's fate, whether he gets hauled back in chains or he's allowed to live in freedom wherever he was found. Okay, so that's big, right? The second event is the acquisition of the Louisiana Territory in 1803, right? So in one fell swoop, at 33 cents per acre for 828,000 square miles, the U.S. bought the western half of the Mississippi River Basin. So 3 cents per acre for 828,000 square miles. What this did was it instantly doubled the size of the United States. So overnight, the U.S. is double its size. So what does that create, right? That creates, oh boy, a situation where everyone's like, oh boy, you know, are we going to be able to take our slaves into this new territory to settle, to strike it rich, to start on your own, or will this be an open land that the people get to decide if they want slavery or freedom? This is huge, okay? Lastly, the abolition of the slave trade occurred in 1807. Now, I didn't really put the... I guess I did put it in linear order. But 1, 2, 3, right? The abolition of the slave trade in 1807 was huge because it caused the border states of Maryland, Kentucky, and Virginia. So these are examples of border states at the time. It really kind of led them to focus on slave breeding. Now, slave breeding is different than the slave trade, all right? Slave breeding was done as an internal domestic trade, right? To kind of bolster the internal trade, meaning that slaves could not be imported from Africa anymore after 1807, right? So what you do is you start this industry where you're mass producing slaves, as callous as it sounds. And this is going to create this internal slave trade where slaves are being raised up to be sold, specifically to be sold, not to work the land. They're being raised specifically to be transported into the lower South, which is Alabama, Georgia, etc., from the upper South, from the border states. All right, so this slave breeding really created this very lucrative internal, or what's commonly called, domestic slave trade in America. All right, so it became very profitable for those states. So let's go back to Louisiana Purchase for a second, real quick. What that did was, like I said, it doubled the size of America, and it pushed thousands of people westward. And with a new population comes calls for statehood, right? As a population kind of coalesces in certain territories, it's going to be natural that over time, as they develop their own economy, their own political structure, their own legal structure in those territories, that they're going to want to apply for statehood, okay? And that's what happened. A bunch of new states were added to the United States around this era, right? In the early to mid-1800s, right? In total, there are 22 states overall, 11 free and 11 slave at this time. So west of the Mississippi, only one state had been admitted at this point, which is around 1807. The rest of the land was simply known as the Missouri Territory. So the land west of the Mississippi River, at that point, only one state had become official. This is big. This is important to understand, okay? Because this is all just open land, and the issue of slavery has this country evenly divided, 11 free states and 11 slave states. So whatever happens in these western territories can really kind of determine the balance of power moving forward. Okay, so we're going to take a quick break right now. That was part one. I don't want to overload everyone with too much information. We're going to have a part two in a second. Ape.
Get this beat untagged for free at freebeats.io.
All right, all right, all right. We are back. We are back, everybody, from the quick break. Had to take a sip of water. It's a lot of talking. All right, part two. Missouri enters the Union in 1818. So the bill authorizing Missouri to join the Union came up for debate in the House of Representatives and Congress in 1818, and it immediately sparked an intense and passionate debate. According to Republican historian George Platt, for the first time, the North realized that what the South had intended to do for years was to make slavery a permanent institution in the original states, and that they wanted to force their agenda through the federal government, right? So really what they were trying to do is make the retention, right, or the protection of slavery and the expansion of slavery a federal priority. So that's what he writes in his book. It was like during the Missouri debate, the Northern politicians finally realized, like, you guys have been hoodwinking us. You Southerners have been hoodwinking us this entire time. Here we are compromising with you, willing to give up things for you. And this whole time, you're just biding your time, right? And now you want to kind of extend slavery forever, because it's important to understand that to many Northerners, to many opponents of slavery, the founders, the original founders, right? So we're talking Thomas Jefferson, George Washington. These Northern politicians believe that the founders intended slavery to disappear. They never intended slavery to become permanent. And that was like a mortal fear for Republicans the Republican Party wasn't founded yet. But this was like a mortal fear of any anti-slavery people, is that the South would gain enough of a foothold in the government to make sure that slavery stayed around forever, right? Southern elites had long realized that if the South did not protect slavery using the federal government, slavery would eventually end, both by the admission of free states into the Union with these large populations, and Northern opponents and politicians would eventually wear down the public and start to really gain traction in the abolitionist cause, all right? So Southerners knew, like, man, if we don't control this now, we could lose slavery forever, and that's kind of like the basis of our power. Put another way, the South pushed for new slave territory to maintain the balance of power in the Senate and to counteract the booming population in the North. Most people were flocking to the North if they wanted economic opportunity. Most immigrants who were coming into the country were settling in Northern cities, and the industrial power of the North around this time was really starting to separate itself from the South. The South was thinly populated. It was mostly based on agriculture. The North was becoming a really industrial powerhouse. So a compromise was reached eventually, okay? So during this Missouri debate, Missouri wants to come into the Union as a slave state, and there's just this huge debate, okay? A compromise was reached. Speaker of the House Henry Clay proposed that Congress admit Missouri to the Union as a slave state, and at the same time admit Maine, which at this time, at this specific time, was actually part of Massachusetts. So Maine wanted to separate itself and become its own state. So Henry Clay says, look, we can work this out, right, guys? Tell you what, Missouri will come into the Union as a slave state, and it will take Maine and bring it in as a free state. And this will keep the balance of power and kind of keep the scales relatively equal. Okay. In February of 1820, the Senate added a second part of the joint statehood bill. Apart from Missouri, slavery was now banned in all the former Louisiana Purchase lands north of the 36 degree 30 latitude line, which ran along Missouri's southern border. At the conclusion of all this, right, so that's a huge compromise right here. This is huge. And we'll see the significance of this. When I say this, I mean the banning of slavery above the 36 degree 30 latitude. We'll see this later when we discuss Bleeding Kansas in the 1850s, okay? So this is a huge event. So mark this, put an asterisk right next to it, okay? So finally, Missouri was brought into the Union, and it was signed into law by President James Monroe on March 7th, 1820. The very next month, Thomas Jefferson wrote to a friend that, quote, the Missouri question, he wrote to his friend, about the Missouri question that, quote, the Missouri question, like a fireball in the night, like a fire bell in the night, awakened and filled me with terror. I considered it at once as the knell of the Union. It is hushed indeed for the moment, but this is a reprieve only, not a final sequence. So what he was saying was that this Missouri question is kind of like the beginning of a big problem, right? It really kind of awakened Thomas Jefferson to how deep the sectional divide had become over the issue of slavery. All right. If Thomas Jefferson, who was a slave owner himself, but also, ironically, the author of the Declaration of Independence and one of the most enlightened thinkers of the time, if he recognized this Missouri question as a big deal, as a huge kind of decision that can kind of shape the course of his young country, then that means that other politicians at the time needed to pay attention. This is it for this episode, episode 2. Don't want to push it too far. It's a lot of information. The bottom line is that the Missouri Compromise of 1820 was the first time, really, in American history that you can see a real deep divide and a real clear separation between Northern ideology and Southern ideology, both politically, economically, socially, everything. So the Missouri Compromise is the foundational event that led us to the Civil War. All right, so please join us for the next episode. It's called Bleeding Kansas, the opening salvo, 1854, okay, the 1859. We're going to talk about the Kansas-Nebraska Act, John Brown, guerrilla warfare, and the bloody massacres that occurred in the Kansas Territory over slavery. Once again, please remember, like our podcast, subscribe, follow us, and rate us, because we do look at all the reviews and all the ratings and all the comments for things that I can or we can improve on. Also, remember to follow us on IG. Once again, Ape Academy Podcast on TikTok, Ape Academy Pod, and we're going to be on YouTube with visuals coming soon. God bless y'all. We really hope you enjoyed today's episode. We really hope that we can kind of help add a little bit of historical context to the current debates that we see on CNN over what was the cause of the Civil War and the importance of slavery in forming this country. Thank you for joining me once again. Shout out to all my international listeners. We love y'all all. Ape out. Shout out to Royalty Free Beats, FreeBeats.io. Shout out to them. God bless you. Ape out.